We're working through the GOP funding plan for K-12 schools on this Monday's State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The deal puts the Republican-controlled legislature at odds with Governor Evers, who declared the spending plan inadequate compared to his $1.4 billion plan. So we'll work through the proposal and identify sticking points. How do you want to see the legislature and the governor negotiate on this budget? How should they tackle special ed funding? What do you want to know about the proposals? We're at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Sean Johnson is Wisconsin Public Radio's Capitol Bureau Chief, and he co-hosts WPR's Politics Podcast. Sean, welcome back.
Hey, Kate.
So the Joint Finance Committee passed this $500 million increase in K-12 school funding, which was a plan perhaps more in line with the Assembly Republicans supporting, and it passed along party lines. What did the committee say about its decision?
I mean, it happened like a day after Assembly Republicans came out with their plan. And so it was almost, I'd say, the sort of a unified Republican plan here. And their general point was that the proposal was in line with what the state could afford. They stressed that they did not increase any income or sales taxes as part of this budget. They took tax increases from Governor Evers' budget out. And so with that, they were still able to increase education funding by $500 million. And so that was kind of what they stressed. It's still an increase, but it's an increase in line with what we can afford without taxes.
How far apart is it from what Governor Evers is proposing?
It is $900 million short of what Governor Evers was proposing. So, I mean, that's pretty sizable. And if you look specifically at how far they are apart on special education funding, which was a big driver of Governor Evers' budget, they are more than $500 million apart just on special education funding. So in terms of sheer dollars, that's quite a gap. And, you know, given what the two sides were saying last week, one wonders how they would close that.
Well, let's hear a bit about what lawmakers are saying. Here's Republican Representative John Nygren on the Evers plan.
I actually believe the proposal that you see in front of us from Governor Evers was a political document that was more of a campaign document than actually a real budget.
Sean, is this a common thing you're hearing among Republicans regarding what Evers put forward as his budget?
Yeah, I think that was kind of, you heard it's sort of a polite version of that from Republican Senator Luther Olson right before Nygren spoke. And then Nygren came out and said, look, what he said right there, the governor's budget was never going to pass. And that's sort of their point, was that this is something that Tony Evers proposed when he was running for governor, and that it's more of a campaign document than an actual policy document.
We're talking about the legislature's budget writing committee. It voted Thursday to put in the budget a $500 million increase for K-12 funding over 2 years. Sean Johnson is WPR State Capitol Bureau Chief. He's walking us through this budget. Your questions, your reactions, they're welcome. 800-642-1234. Is this $500 million increase adequate, or does it fall short of covering K-12 needs? And special education teachers and school administrators, what would a bump in funding for special ed mean for the work you do? Does current funding fall short? Call in. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Sean, this plan includes a $97 million increase in special education funding, which is $50 million more than what Assembly Republicans had most recently proposed. So what reasons did they give for voting up that increase?
Yeah, so again, I think what they ended up voting on in finance on Thursday was came a day after Assembly Republicans came out with their plan. And so I think whatever increase they had there was to get Senate Republicans on board. And there are a couple ways of looking at this plan, I guess. A $97 million increase is the first increase that the state has had in a decade to special education funding. So that's obviously what Republicans are highlighting. First time we've done this in a long time, $97 million brings the state up to a 30% reimbursement rate for costs of special education expenses. But it is $500 million plus short of what Governor Tony Evers proposed. So, I mean, it's significantly smaller than what the governor wanted. And so that's where you see a lot of this gulf between the two sides.
Ahead of the vote, Republican Assembly Speaker Robin Voss had this to say about Assembly Republicans and their plan.
We are making a historic investment in education. This will be the highest level of investment that we have ever made in our public schools in the history of Wisconsin. And that is something that we hope will generate broad bipartisan support and not focus kind of on the details of what only a green eye-shaded accountant could look at.
Green eye-shaded accountant. Is this historic, Sean?
Well, I mean, what the speaker's talking about there is the overall spending on education. And so pretty much every budget, if there's not a budget cut, every budget will be the largest budget ever for education. I mean, that's just the way that it works. If there's any kind of an increase at all, the total sum spent on schools will be larger than it was in the last budget if you're not adjusting for inflation or anything like that. In terms of the increase in this budget, if you just look at the increase, it's definitely not the largest that the state has had. In fact, the state increased education funding by more in the last budget. Under Governor Walker's last budget, there was a $639 million increase in K-12 school funding versus the $500 million approved last week by the Joint Finance Committee. So, you know, even in recent history, it's not the largest increase.
So what have you heard out of education advocates and policy research about what this education budget is looking like for 2 years?
Well, the education advocates, the public school advocates who spoke at the Capitol ahead of Thursday's vote by the Finance Committee were not happy with the direction that they could see this going. I mean, they saw the Assembly Republican plan on the table at that point. There was some news leaking out that the version in the Budget Committee was going to be largely the same, aside from some more special education funding. And they're saying that doesn't cut it. Basically, I think one of the things that they point to is just the way that special education is funded in Wisconsin right now puts a lot of the burden on local school districts. So by law, schools have to pick up all the costs of special education. I mean, they are required to. They can't. It's not like an expense that they can put off. And so what they end up doing is picking that up with local dollars, sometimes picking it up out of their general funds, because the state only reimburses for about a quarter of all the costs right now. And so if the state's not picking up the costs, local districts have to do it. And there was a report in the Wisconsin Policy Forum this year that showed that the gap between what special education costs are or eligible special education costs and what the state actually pays for those costs is $1 billion. So it's a substantial shift to local districts to pick up those costs instead of having the state do it.
We're getting briefed on the education plan with WPR's Capital Bureau Chief Sean Johnson. You're welcome to join in, 800-642-1234. What areas of public education are in need of the most funding? How would you like to see lawmakers address school needs? What questions do you have about how the governor and Republicans differ on K-12 spending? Call in. You can also tweet us, WPR Mornings. We'll be back to this in just a moment on the State Capitol Report here on the Ideas Network. On a Monday, Memorial Day, you're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Republican leaders of the legislature's budget committee said Governor Evers should accept their education funding proposal because it's not going to get any better than this. The committee voted Thursday along party lines to increase funding for our state's K-12 schools by $500 million. So we're sifting through the GOP funding plan with your perspective along the way at 800-642-1234. How do you wish to see lawmakers and the governor negotiate on this budget? Are you optimistic they can find common ground, or do you think they should dig in to defend their respective plans despite big gaps? Call in. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. And WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson is our guide. Sean, Governor Evers said Republicans' plan, quote, doesn't get us where we need to be. And you sat down with the governor on Wednesday ahead of the vote. And when you asked him whether he would veto the plan if it doesn't include more funding for education, he said this.
In addition to education, we're also concerned about transportation and health care and making sure that we're dealing with the environmental issues we're facing. So I'd be hesitant to talk about what we're going to veto.
So, Sean, sounds like there is a lot on the governor's mind. And why isn't he so quick to say he'll veto this?
Because for him to veto this would be pretty unusual, actually, because if you're talking about vetoing the whole budget, the governor has not done that in Wisconsin since they started going to this executive budget in 1931. I did not know that till last week, but if, you know, just talking to the legislative service agencies and nonpartisan agencies that work for the legislature about, you know, has the governor ever vetoed an entire budget? Not only couldn't they remember it, people who'd worked there a long time, but they didn't have any record of it since the state started doing this. It's a very big document. There's a lot going on in a budget, and historically, governors have had really strong veto power in Wisconsin, and so they've been able to, you know, while they can't make the budget exactly what they want with that veto power, they've been able to make changes so that the budget is to their liking. The trick with school funding, though, is that Tony Evers can't use his veto pen to put money back in the budget. So, you know, if Republicans increase school funding by $500 million and Tony Evers wants to increase it by $900 million more, he can't use his veto pen to add money in that way. So it puts him in the position of, if he really doesn't like what's in front of him, he'd have to veto the whole thing. And a Wisconsin governor has never done that.
We often talk about the funding formula for schools and what that looks like. Where in this budget would we be with funding in terms of the funding formula?
Well, if you're talking about per pupil,
uh-huh.
You know, how much the state spends per pupil or increases per pupil, it's about $200 in the first year of the budget and $204 in the second year of the budget, which is what Governor Evers proposed. It's what passed in the last budget under Governor Walker. But I guess where the reason there's such a gap, though, in terms of funding is that, you know, money flows to school districts in other ways. The special education funding is what's, you know, referred to as a categorical. And what it means is that schools that have the highest needs, you know, the most special needs students, the highest expenses for special education, get more money from the state. So it that's not distributed on this, you know, more, I guess, flat $200 and $204 increase per school. It flows to schools that have the highest expenses. And, I mean, there are smaller examples of money going to districts in that way, but that's the one that I think is kind of the easiest to grasp because it's just the biggest dollar figure.
Is there anything in this education spending plan that, as you've talked with the governor, that he won't budge on, that it's a non-negotiable?
It is. I mean, it's a little tricky to get him to take that stand right now.
Mm-hmm.
He is still talking about his budget and wanting to get his budget, and he's still talking about the budget process being a long way from over. And, you know, like, it passed the Finance Committee, but that is a committee. This thing still has to pass the full legislature. Typically, before that happens, you have a lot of private meetings of Assembly Republicans and Senate Republicans, and they kind of have to decide what they want the final product to look like that passes the full legislature. Sometimes that negotiating process can involve meetings between a governor and legislative leaders. They haven't done that too much, but they did meet last week, and they have had a few meetings. So it sounds like Governor Evers is still holding out hope that he'll get something more than what passed this past week. And right now, he's still talking about his plan as the best plan on the table.
You also heard from Republican Senator Luther Olson, who said that Governor Evers previously supported an increase to special ed that's similar to the GOP plan. What do we know there?
Yeah, what Senator Olson is talking about there is the state's reimbursement rate for special ed. So under the Republican plan that passed the Finance Committee last week, the state would, in the second year of the budget, the state would pick up 30% of eligible special education costs. So a 30% reimbursement rate, we could say.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that reimbursement rate is something that a state superintendent, Evers, had supported in previous budget proposals when he was state superintendent and not running for governor. And so Senator Olson is saying, look, we met you there, and this is something that you supported back then, and so we should feel good about this. So, but under Governor Evers' plan, though, which he ran on in 2018 and that he proposed in February, the state's reimbursement rate for special ed costs would be 60%. So he supports a much higher rate now. Senator Olson is saying, though, that a few years ago, you would have been with us on this 30% rate.
Sean, remind us where we are in the negotiation process over the school's budget and where we have to go.
If you assume that, what Joint Finance or the Budget Committee does is the final product, that they are through that portion. You know, they decided that they got a deal that they felt like they could pass out of this 16-person committee. You know, there's 12 Republicans on the committee. There were 11 who were voting on this last week. And so, if they put a lot of importance on the Finance Committee and what the Finance Committee comes up with, then, that part of the process could be done. It's just kind of a matter of whether they're willing to reopen it as they take up other stuff in the budget. And so, that's what I think Governor Evers is hoping on, that they'll kind of reopen it before it goes to the full legislature, because whatever they pass in the budget committee has to pass the full Senate, pass the full assembly.
Well, let's move away from school funding here and look at the legislature's budget committee Tuesday signing off on raises for prison guards and state workers. Can you fill us in on what happened there?
Yeah, the budget committee set aside funding for a 14% increase in the starting pay for prison guards. And the driving factor here is that you have a lot of vacancies in the state's prison system. And you have maximum security prisons like Waupun, for example, which are overcrowded. And you have, I think in Waupun, they had in April a 30% vacancy rate among corrections officers. So you're asking the people who are there to do more, to work a lot of overtime. That ends up leading to a lot of overtime expenses for the state. Also, it's pretty challenging on the guards who have to do the job. And so you had the governor propose an increase for corrections officers in starting pay. He actually, outside of the budget process, instituted, I think, a $5 an hour raise for some of these institutions where they have the highest vacancy rates. And then last week you had the budget committee sign off on an increase for, in starting pay for all the institutions. And they actually supported a number that was slightly higher than the governor. So that looks like something that is going to happen.
Well, Sean, set us up for the week. What are you watching as budget negotiations go forward?
There is a big day on tap tomorrow. The Finance Committee is taking up raises for private attorneys who take public defender cases. Right now, Wisconsin's pay is the lowest in the nation at $40 per hour. They're going to raise that up to $70 per hour under the governor's budget, and this is something that Republicans have come out in support of, at least in press conferences. They're taking up the University of Wisconsin system that includes a continued freeze of undergraduate tuition at the UW. But under the governor's plan, this is something that Governor Walker didn't do. Governor Evers would fund the freeze, is what they say. He would spend state money to make up for tuition revenue that the university would lose. So that gets a little tricky. And then they've also got a bunch of Department of Natural Resources issues to take up on Tuesday.
So you'll be busy.
I think so.
Thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
Sean Johnson is WPR's State Capitol reporter. Up next, it's news, and the State Capitol report continues with recent efforts to expand mental health care services in schools and where state funding could help. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network. We're staying on the topic of education for this State Capitol report. I'm on a Memorial Day. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. As we've been talking about, Governor Evers and Republican legislative leaders both want to increase funding for student mental health in this year's state budget, but they disagree by how much. Republicans are proposing $20 million more for mental health needs. The governor's plan directs $64 million more toward mental health services and programs. Are you a student or the parent of a student who struggles with mental health? Do you have enough services and training in your school? What do you think about the state's recent push to expand access to services in schools? There's a line for you at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Heidi Eliopoulos is superintendent of Chippewa Falls Public School District, and she joins us from our WPR studio in Eau Claire. Heidi, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
Well, let's start out by talking about the mental health grants that lawmakers could expand through this year's state budget. The grants were established in the last state budget, and your district was awarded $75,000 last year. Can you give us an overview of how that funding has been used in Chippewa Falls?
Yes, absolutely. We were so fortunate to receive the maximum award amount of $75,000. And in Chippewa Falls, we did a few things with that. We really emphasized creating partnerships between those mental health provider experts and networks in the community and the schools where the students are. So one of the things that we created was an interconnected systems framework. So in that framework, we worked very closely with mental health providers who came into our schools. They served on teams. They provided training for our teachers who are working with students. They provided advisory when there was a specific student who was struggling at school with mental health and was able to provide support and recommendations in the school community. So that was a great partnership that really benefited us on a large scale. More specific to ways that we supported families with mental health services is we created a program known as Cardinal Care. It was a student and family assistance program. So every family in our school district received 4 free mental health counseling sessions, or really the sessions could focus on anything. It could focus on parent and child relationships, anything like that. And we had a high level of participation and access this school year alone. As of May 16th, we've had 194 counseling sessions provided just this school year to families. And then the third thing that we did with our grant dollars is we really ramped up the school-based mental health programming that we've been providing since 2014. During the 2014-2015 school year, we started working with one therapist who saw about 20 students over the course of the school year. As of this school year, we've been working with 9 agencies and 23 therapists, and we've been providing school-based mental health services to 144 students this school year.
So, yeah, so lots going on there. But let's mm-hmm. break down one of those numbers. You said the grant covered 194 counseling sessions with families. What kind of issues are these people seeking help with, these students?
Absolutely. So there's a wide variety of topics the program can help families with. So it could be anything from academic struggles, discipline issues, household stressors, stress, depression, anxiety, anger management, drugs, alcohol, grief, marital issues, divorce, relationship troubles, eating disorders. However, when we look at our breakdown of presenting problems that the program has supported, the number one presenting problem was anxiety, and the number two presenting problem was depression. Though the area where we actually saw the fewest visit were school-related things like school life balance or anxiousness about academic performance or other school-related issues.
In your area, Heidi, Northwest Wisconsin, we've been hearing a whole lot about the larger issues with methamphetamine and children being removed from their families because of drugs. Have you seen this in your district?
Absolutely. In fact, what we're seeing with the Cardinal Care Access and the anxiety and depression, we would say as well that that's what we're seeing in our schools, is that situational anxiety and situational depression, we are seeing that more prevalent among our youth in our community and in our schools, because there's some pretty tough things going on in children's homes and they're aware of it. And it's impacting their mental health and their social emotional well-being. Specific to meth, we are approaching crisis mode in Chippewa County. In fact, this last week, our county rolled out a Take a Stand Against Meth campaign, because since 2014, we have seen an extraordinary uptick in the use of methamphetamine. In 2014, there were about 80 cases in Chippewa County related to meth. Now we're up well over 200, nearing 298. And that is impacting children and their homes. Homes are less safe for children in these situations. In 2014, there were 12 cases where children were removed from the home specifically because of methamphetamine. And now in 2018, there were 198 children removed from the home for specific methamphetamine cases. And of our home removals, 85% of them are connected to methamphetamine. And of those children, 65% go back to their parents. And so nearly half of these children, once they're removed from their parents' home, they don't return. And even though being removed from the home puts them in a place where they're in a safe and loving environment, that in itself, being taken away from your parents and removed from your home, that's traumatic in itself, as are all the things leading up to that removal, with the domestic violence, the criminal lifestyle they're being exposed to, and the gross neglect when parents are in the grips of methamphetamine. They're not able to care for their children, and the children are being neglected.
We're talking about mental health services in schools with Heidi Eliopoulos. She's superintendent of Chippewa Falls Public School District. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you a teacher, a principal, perhaps a school counselor? Do you think your school is doing enough to address children's mental health? Are students able to find help and focus on their education? We're at 800-642-1234 for you to join in. Email ideas at WPR.org. Heidi, these drug problems are going on in the community and in students' homes, as you talk about. Can you draw the connection back to mental health and student success in the classroom? How is it related? How is it interconnected?
Absolutely. So when a student has an adverse childhood experience, an ACE as it's commonly called, and I say student, but I mean a youth in general, where they're having this life-changing experience, be it being exposed to domestic violence, being exposed to neglect, emotional abuse, physical abuse, anything that is happening to them while their brain is being developed, that is one of the outcomes that we see is not only academic struggles in school, struggles with relationships, struggles with behaviors, struggle with their own mental well-being. And so all of those things, when a child is having an adverse childhood experience, which they are more likely and having ongoing if they're in a home where they're exposed to drug use and abuse, that is absolutely going to have a direct impact on their mental health, on their mental well-being, on their success in school, on their ability to have relationships with others, and not only on their cognitive abilities, but all of those other factors, the relationships, the behaviors, all of those also impact their academic success at school.
How is your district, Chippewa Falls, addressing the stigma of mental health or students who have perhaps trepidation about even seeking help in the first place?
Absolutely. So there's work that we're doing with all students, whether or not they have struggles with mental health or mental well-being. We're really focusing on developing resilience training. So sometimes we, the loving, caring adults in their lives, think that the best way to serve children is by removing obstacles out of their path. But when we do that, we're not setting them up for that realistic life skill they need of coping and working through challenges. So we're working with students to focus on their strengths and working through struggles, not to avoid struggle, because struggle is going to be part of any of our lives, but to take on struggle, work through it, have some resilience, have problem solving, and lean upon our own strengths to get us through those times. And that's something that's happening at the universal level across the board. We start talking to students about their strengths very early on, right away in elementary school, so that students can see when they struggle that they do have strengths and how to go back to those strengths.
So let's look at school staff for a moment. Aside from helping students, has the district brought in community mental health providers for your staff?
Yes, absolutely. We there's several trainings that we're providing. We're providing mental health first aid. We provide trauma-informed care. Additionally, we use a program at the high school called Sources of Strength. So staff and staff coordinators get additional training on how to help students identify and draw upon their strengths when they struggle. That's actually a level of training that we've brought in that has evolved over the last couple of years. 10 years ago, even 5 years ago, when we talked about staff training, we'd have been talking about curriculum, we'd have been talking about assessment and how to develop, would have been talking about instructional strategies. And while we do all of those things, we know that in order to teach the whole child and help students to be successful across the board in school, we also need to be working with their mental well-being and their overall health and wellness. So we have had staff participate in mindfulness training, and again, that trauma-informed care. We have gatekeeper training, like question, persuade, refer, which is a suicide gatekeeper training. We have a variety of levels, some things that we use with all students, and then more narrow training for those who might need a little extra intervention or assistance.
We're talking with Heidi Eliopoulos. She is the superintendent of Chippewa Falls Public School District. You can join in 800-642-1234. Do you think your school is doing enough to address kids' mental health? Let's talk about it. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. On this Monday, Memorial Day, it's the State Capitol Report, and we're looking at mental health services and what funding in the state budget could mean for expanding services in schools. Last year, as we heard, 64 school districts shared about $3 million in state grant funding to provide school-based mental health services. In a given year, one in five students faces a mental health issue, with more than 80% of incidents going untreated. That's according to the CDC. You can join in 800-642-1234. What gaps in children's mental health services do you see in your community, in your district? Is there a shortage of providers or problems with transportation to clinics or a lack of affordable options? call in. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. And Heidi Eliopoulos stays with us. She is superintendent of Chippewa Falls Public School District. Let's go to the phones now with Anthony joining us from Toma. Hi, Anthony. What's on your mind?
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just had a quick thought. With students and youth in general spending majority of their time outside of the school, I almost feel like it's unfair to place such a large burden on our teachers and our educators, almost foist upon them this expectation that, no, the buck stops with you, where, I mean, really, it almost has to be a home care issue. I mean, is it really realistic to expect our teachers to really bear that burden?
Great question, Anthony. How does this parlay with social services, Heidi?
That's a great question. And we get asked that a lot of, well, wait a second, why are the schools providing this service? What we found when we were leaning upon largely factors outside of the school is that we found a few challenges. We found that there was a shortage of providers, and we found that some of the families who needed these services the most were least able to navigate the system on their own. So we had struggles with families making and keeping appointments, taking their children, picking them up at school, having transportation, taking them to those appointments, and then bringing them back afterwards. So they were missing larger periods of time of school. And so that's when we started the school-based mental health services, where we were able to cut out at least the transportation, and we were able to support and assist families with setting up those appointments, finding the provider that was the best match for the child, letting the child come down and go to their appointment right at school, cutting out that need for transportation. The challenge we found there, though, is that there was a gap of uninsured and underinsured families who even that wasn't enough to help them get the services that they needed. About as, even though we were serving 100 students, there were as many that were turned away because they didn't have insurance. And that's where Cardinal Care came in, where we were able to create this subscription program where we subscribed for all of our families and paid for the cost for them to get those four services. And then if they had additional insurance, they could use that above and beyond. But yes, I absolutely see that point, that in an ideal world, these things should happen outside of school, but we're at the point now where we're asking ourselves, if not us, then who? Because they haven't been happening outside of school on a consistent enough basis to meet all of the needs of the families in our community. So absolutely, I share and understand that sentiment. And we talk about that with our staff as well, because part of this is secondary trauma for our staff who are feeling the stress and feeling the weight on their hearts of working with these children who are in such challenging situations.
Heidi, Wisconsin has one of our country's higher rates for youth suicide. How often are you seeing those types of cases in Chippewa Falls, and how does the district respond?
Yes, absolutely. So in Chippewa County, the highest frequency of suicide is middle-aged white males. However, any suicide is too many, and certainly any youth suicide is too many. What we've done in Chippewa Falls is, a couple years ago, we brought together a wide group of community stakeholders. We brought civic leaders in. We brought business leaders in. We had school personnel, both public and private. We had folks from DHS. We had emergency responders, we had faith leaders, and we came around the table and we did an informal audit of what we offer for support and services. And we found a lot of prevention work. We have actually fairly robust resources for prevention. We realized the gap was postvention. When a community has best practices in place for after a suicide, those postvention strategies, behaviors, responses actually become prevention for additional suicide. So it's about avoiding contagion or clustering or copycat or whichever language you would use. So in Chippewa Falls, we built a community handbook where we walk through the best practices of postvention after a suicide and have done trainings in our community to say if we respond according to these best practices after a suicide, then we're able to prevent additional suicides in the future moving forward. And so that resource has been extremely important as we work to support families for this goal that even one suicide is too many.
Well, we know school districts are so data-driven. When you look at the numbers, are you seeing changes in the classroom because more students are getting mental health services? Are they performing better on tests or maybe graduating more often?
That's a great question. So just recently, I compared our Chippewa Falls data to data in our county, data in our CESA region, and data with students, school districts across the state of Wisconsin that are similar to we are, similar size, similar demographics. And it's interesting because I noticed across the board with our standardized assessments, which really is the only tool you have to measure district to district, looking at our standardized assessments and notice that with some of the challenges communities like ours are experiencing, we're seeing student achievement being flat or even decreasing slightly. However, when I look at the Chippewa Falls data compared to those groups, we see a fairly sharp upward trajectory. And even when compared to other school districts with upward trajectories, ours is more swiftly trajecting upward. So can we tie that directly to the mental health supports that we're providing? It's hard to say that's the absolute reason, but it's one of many factors in place that are causing our student achievement. Even though it isn't yet where we want it to be, we're beating the odds with growth because we're growing more quickly and more strongly than other comparable school districts are, and that has to play a role in this.
You shared with us before the interview that Chippewa Falls is applying for another state grant this year, but the district recently got a much larger federal grant for mental health programs. Can you tell us a little bit about how that money will be used ahead?
Yes, we were very excited. And while we did apply for another state grant, we aren't necessarily banking on it because we are so fortunate that we won a federal grant from the Substance Abuse Mental Health Alliance. It's us, La Crosse, and Minocqua. And for us, it'll be $360,000 every year for the next 5 years. And we will be able to do so much good with those dollars. So what we'll be doing is we'll be expanding Cardinal Care. We'll be expanding our school-based mental health. And what we'll also be doing is we're creating a position that we're calling a mental health navigator. And this is a position that their role will to be to work with families to help them navigate through the system, help them understand their insurance, how to use their insurance, help them know what providers are out there and which one is the best match for their child and their child's needs, help them take them to appointments if that's the barrier keeping their child from getting the services they need. So that will be a game changer for families in the Chippewa Falls School District to have this point person that's their job to help families get the services that they need.
Heidi, thank you so much for joining us.
It has been my pleasure.
Heidi Eliopoulos is the superintendent of Chippewa Falls Public School District, and she joined us from WPR's studio in Eau Claire. Just ahead, Jake Patterson, who pleaded guilty earlier this year for kidnapping 13-year-old Jamie Kloss and the intentional homicide of her parents, received his sentence. We'll talk about it. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're moving along on the morning show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.